Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Have you got game? Got game on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. This week, Paul Pierce is blaming weak NBA trash talk on video games. We take issue with it. RBI Baseball is coming back again. Christine talks about problems with Game of Thrones. And release the Kraken. Brian reviews Evolve.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Omen Qureshi. That's Brian Calhoun. There's Christine Chubb. We're sitting around the table again, ready to talk some video games for another week right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. If you haven't heard the show, where you been? We've been on for almost 7 years. 7 years, guys, in May. Seven.
It'd be ironic if they were playing video games this entire time.
And listened to the station regularly and didn't know we were on.
Yeah, and just missed it because they were always playing video games at this point.
That's true. And hey, Sunday morning, 7 a.m. Who doesn't game at that time of day?
There's got to be a few people who are ending their evening of gaming.
Or some like parents with young ones who are up at that time gaming, you know, whatever.
Getting in a few hours of some gaming in before the kids wake up.
Or something, or doing it while the kids are playing, or, you know, something, playing with the kids.
Who knows?
There's lots of different things you can do. We have a lot to talk about in this show. You can always follow along at GotGame590 on Twitter. Give us your opinion and your thoughts. You can also email us, GotGame@Sportsnet590.ca. Now, Paul Pierce, Raptor killer Paul Pierce. The guy is notorious for destroying the Raptors, whether he played for the Celtics, whether he played for the Brooklyn Nets, boo, or the current Washington Wizards that he plays for. He says that the current generation of players in the NBA, so the youngins, the Andrew Wiggins, the Anthony Bennetts, both from Toronto, he didn't mention them specifically, but he means this new generation of guys stink at the trash talk. They're no good. Now, Pierce is legendary known to talk some smack on the court. There's guys in the previous years like Gary Payton who were legendary for it. But Pierce says the new generation of guys are no good. And he says the reason they're no good is because they're playing the video games. Because they're sitting there playing the NBA 2Ks and they're not going to the playgrounds. And that's why they're no good at talking trash.
Yeah, but the timeline doesn't really work out. They would have to have been playing the EA sports games back in the day if they're really growing up and they're now like professional
basketball
players.
I don't know. I mean, if you think about it, Wiggins is 19 or 20, so he could have been playing the 2K versions.
For the last couple of years. Don't forget that the NBA 2K franchise has only been the premier franchise for, say, the last 5 years
right.
at this
so
point.
So anybody who went to college slash high school in the last 5 years, so you can look at guys like...
DeMar DeRozan has to be outside of this conversation, right?
Probably, yeah. I would say DeMar is right outside this conversation.
He's in EA sports territory.
Yes. Okay. Anybody else who came after that is NBA 2. So like Kyrie Irving could be an NBA 2K guy.
Okay.
And we've mentioned Andrew Wiggins. Some of those guys are 2K guys. But the thing I think that's funny about this is that Pierce says the problem is that these guys aren't talking smack because they're playing video games and not going to the outdoor basketball courts. First of all...
Has he played Call of Duty?
Yeah. Like, has Paul Pierce... this tells me that Paul Pierce has never been on Xbox Live or the PSN network. Because if you're on there... All that's happening is people are trashing you.
And yeah. much younger.
Oh, like, yeah. Like 10-year-olds are talking smack to you.
I've had children say very weird and kind of creepy things to
yeah,
me.
And also obscene.
Oh,
and
yeah.
like profanity lace thing.
Yeah, things that if they said on the basketball court, they'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
All right, no. Paul, you got to go. This game is over.
I feel like if Paul Pierce, like now I know, like Paul Pierce thinks he knows what trash talk is. I don't care what guys say on the field, on the court in NBA. It is not nearly as rough and as bad as it is on the Xbox Live network or on the PSN Plus, or if you play online on your PC. Like, people are ruthless
yeah.
when you're gaming.
What we need to do is we need to do a crowdfunding campaign and raise, I don't know, how much do you think it would take to get Paul Pierce to come out for a day? $50,000?
Probably, okay. Yeah, that's a decent number.
So we need to raise $50,000 to get Paul Pierce out for a day and film a reality television show where it's him versus 10-year-olds.
In like Call of Duty?
And
yeah.
Not. It doesn't have to be like playing a video game. I literally just want them to stand in front of mics and just do the best trash talking they can and just watch Paul Pierce's face melt, like literally melt from the spew of hate that comes out of the mouths of these young 10-year-olds that are playing on these Xbox Live and PlayStation networks.
And yeah. I think the difference too is that what Pierce needs to understand is that when you're trash talking somebody to their face to face, it's different because you have to have a certain amount of courage to say something to somebody's face. But we all know when you're playing games on your Xbox or your PlayStation or your computer or whatever you're using, people feel free to say whatever comes to their mind because they know you can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, if you're sitting, you know, in Colorado and I'm in Toronto and I trashed you, the likelihood of you grabbing a flight and flying over to my house to take me up for what I said about your mom or what I said about your gaming habits is not likely. So people get a certain amount of courage. I wouldn't say courage. It's like, you know, false courage to say whatever the heck they want to you because they can, because they know there's no repercussions for it. The most that's going to happen to you is that Xbox or PlayStation River is going to suspend your account or give you some sort of penalty for it. But that's it. You trash talk a guy and say some stuff in the face to the NBA, there's a good chance you're going to get a fist to the face or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a fine.
Or a fine, or he's going to knee you in the groin as you try to run past him. So people on the online universe, I think, are potentially tougher to handle than guys who are trash talking you face to face. I think. Because I think guys on people who stuff online are ruthless.
Yeah.
They can be, at least. Not, I don't want to say they all are, but they can be.
A lot of them are, yeah. It's I remember having a conversation with somebody about, they were talking about the violence in video games and whatnot, and I was thinking, I'm like, what's worse for people is having to listen to some of the things that people will say to you when you are playing online. That's worse sometimes than any video game that you're actually playing. It's like, okay, this person is saying a whole bunch of terrible things to me. Mute.
Christine, so you're saying the real hatred are the other people you play online with?
That's right. That is the hatred of the hatred.
But, the thing is, the three of us, we all review different games for this show, and most times we're not reviewing the same game. Sometimes we are, but most times one of us will play a game and review it. So you have to go find people to play with because the three of us aren't playing it together. And so we'll go online and we'll try to find people to play with. And sometimes I play, and I'll hear people in that room, and I'll be like, my God, first of all, you sound like you're 8. Where did you learn that language? Mm-hmm. And second of all, where did you learn the context of what we're talking about? And so, I don't know. Listen, Paul Pierce, you're going to the Hall of Fame first ballot. You're one of the best shooters in NBA history. You've got NBA championships, and I'm sure you've got amazing trash talk game on the court. I don't doubt any of that.
But you're not a 10-year-old playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, but if you think, and I don't doubt your criticism that the new generation of guys in the NBA maybe don't talk trash as well as the older generation of guys. Maybe guys like KG and Paul Pierce and Tim Duncan talk a lot more trash than the younger generation does. But if you're going to blame it on the fact that they play video games online, you need to start playing some online video games to understand what real trash talk is, my friend.
Maybe they just like each other. Maybe they just don't want to talk trash. Maybe the guys are just like, let's all play the game and have a good time.
Maybe those kids were raised with manners, and that's
right.
Why. Maybe they're listening to their moms. You got nothing nice to say, don't say it at all.
They're respecting each other's game and their athleticism.
Yeah, kudos to you, sir. Actually, I read a really good article. I don't know if you guys read this article about Andrew Luck, the quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, and the fact that he doesn't trash talk guys at all. In fact, what he does is he compliments guys. So if a guy comes through and like drills him and nails him for a sack, he'll get up and be like, oof, you got me that time, and pat him on the back, pat him on the butt as they walk away. And the I think it was like in the Washington Post or something, and the guy wrote an article and interviewed all the other players and say like it pisses them off. Because like a guy will, like a linebacker will come through and just like crush him, and Andrew Luck will get up and be like, ooh, man, you knocked me out there. Like, great job. And they're like, and they know it's genuine. Like, Luck means it. He's actually complimenting them. And they're like, it's so aggravating because, like, you want to get under their skin and then it just doesn't work. So maybe that's what they're doing.
Right. He's like, maybe they won't sack him as hard the next time. He'll be like, this guy's nice.
Maybe that's what these young guys are doing, because clearly Pierce is annoyed. He's not very happy.
It's
so
true.
You know.
Video games being blamed for something else.
You are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. Follow along on Twitter at GotGame590. Give us your thoughts on that whole trash-talking debate. Now, a classic, and when I mean classic, I mean classic old-school video game.
One of the originals.
One of the original bad boys. The little white triangle floating in space, shooting down big mass chunks, better known as asteroids.
Piloted by Ben Affleck.
What?
Well, apparently there was supposed to be an asteroids movie, because we're talking about asteroids.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. But in the asteroids movie, I believe it was Ben Affleck who was attached to pilot the ship in the asteroids film.
Oscar winning right there.
This was a couple years ago.
Amazing.
So.
Well, he is an Oscar winner, let's not forget. Not for his acting, but he's an Oscar winner.
I understand how you guys don't remember, but Ben Affleck was supposed to be in the asteroids film.
Is Ben Affleck just supposed to be in everything?
I think pretty much they just attach right him now? To everything, and they're like, all right, yeah, until he says no, he's a part of
like
it.
Like, every script and every project is rumored to be attached to Ben Affleck right now. Well, him and Benedict Cumberbatch. It's those two. They're just in everything now.
That's why when video game movies come up, I don't like talking about them on Got Game, because there's so much moving and shaking behind the scenes where, okay, it's one thing to say that this movie might be made and this guy's attached. That's not the same as, hey, this movie's being made.
So you don't want to talk about the fact that Assassin's Creed is finally in production?
Not really, no.
It's happening.
Because it is, and it is finally in production. And Michael Fassbender, who's awesome, is going to be in it.
Yay!
But we're talking about the game Asteroids. It's coming back. They're bringing it back, Brian.
No, it's not. It's not that at all. Basically, what's happened is that the people who own the rights to Asteroids right now, quote-unquote Atari, but at this point, who knows what Atari
is? Atari is not Atari anymore.
Atari is something else.
Atari hasn't been Atari for a long time.
Atari is a name. It's not really...
That's exactly what it is.
It's not the Atari that put out Asteroids. It's just a name. It's some group of investors. Who the heck really knows what Atari is right now? It's not the game company, remember. So somebody who owns the rights to Atari and all their games like Asteroids has decided to make an MMO. Something that's a lot like, say, Freelancer from a couple of years ago. Something, I guess, today more closely associated with, say, Star Citizen, a massively multiplayer online world where you go around space and you try and harvest materials and do all sorts of MMO quests where you're gathering 10 of these or killing 5 of that.
Your typical MMO kind of stuff,
You go over here, you talk to this guy, he'll send you across the map to go talk to this other guy, and you come back. That sort of stuff. And guess what? Instead of coming up with an original name, making an original franchise, somebody thought, hey, well, we have Asteroids, the name, lying around. Why don't we just attach it to this project that's not Asteroids? Which,
well, you know, that happens because that's a name that everybody would know.
It happens all the time for the exact same reason.
That's right.
That people know exactly what Asteroids is. It's a known quantity. It's something that, hey, when you're sitting there in a store looking at video games and somebody says Asteroids on the box, well, you know exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm. Trying to hone in on people's nostalgia, I guess.
Exactly. So there is going to be, for some strange reason, a small little mini game where you have to defend your base against a asteroid meteor shower.
For some reason, or the reason that the game's actually called Asteroids, and they should probably put that in.
Well, it feels to me like they put that in because it's called Asteroids, but if you're just going to use the name, just use the name and make your game. Don't go for that extra level where you shoehorn a mini game about Asteroids into your MMO that doesn't really have to do much with the original Asteroids game.
I hope in this game, though, like the original Asteroids game, I can just win by repeatedly going from corner to corner, circling my dude over and over again. That's what it is. Over and over. Just doing that. That was how I always played. That was my go-to.
Yeah. You know what was always risky in Asteroids was moving the spaceship.
That's
eventually, you would have to.
I'd always do that. I would never be standstill. Yeah, I'd always be moving about.
It's always a risk when you start like flying through space.
Spinning.
And you have to get,
it was always spinning, ever twirling.
I was actually a bigger fan of Astro Blast than I was of Asteroids. That was the game where you'd have the ship at the bottom and the meters would be falling.
I was more of a Sinistar guy.
Like Pac-Man.
But the best game on Atari, and I still stand by this today, the best game on Atari was River Raid. I loved River Raid.
River Raid was good.
That was
I really
amazing
liked it
game.
Too.
Yeah, it was really
What's
good.
Your favorite game? Send us a tweet, @GotGame590. But we are done for this segment. We have a lot more to come, including an old new baseball game that's coming back. That's coming up next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. We've got game. Do you? In the game.
You're back listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network, talking video games for another week. I'm Omen Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, and Christine Chubb are around the table. We talked about some baseball news last week, the week before, whatever week Russell Martin was named
it's
to be the cover.
It's baseball season. We're talking about baseball news every week now.
So pitchers and catchers reporting in the next few days.
Yay!
There's lots of baseball news coming out. Russell Martin named to be the cover of the MLB The Show franchise here in Canada. And now we find out that RBI Baseball, which made its triumphant return last year, is coming back again.
I don't mean to be rude, but to be honest, more like a mediocre return. See, the problem with RBI Baseball 2014 was that it was too much like RBI Baseball the 32-bit era, which I played the game for a week, and after playing RBI Baseball 14 for a week, I realized I had moved past the 32-bit era.
Mm-hmm.
So they are back now with RBI 15, and a whole bunch of new improvements, which, I'll be honest, some of them actually make this game sound interesting, something that I may jump into for, you know, a good week, and then after that, maybe even still play it afterwards.
Well, the most important thing, I think, whenever you create a sports franchise, a sports game, is you gotta have the license of the major leagues for it to become appealing. That's why FIFA is so good. That's why PES is so good. That's why the NHL and Madden franchises are so good. And this game, they have it.
Do you know who makes it, right?
Yeah. But I'm saying, if you're going to make a competing game, that's part of what you need to have.
Okay.
And so that's why
I reviewed RBI Baseball 14. The fact that they were made by RBI Baseball Advanced Media, the tech part of Major League Baseball, didn't really change anything about my opinions of RBI Baseball 14 because they had all the licenses. It was made by the Major League Baseball Association. It's not like this was some sort of strange little offshoot that a little company made. This was the guys who are Major League Baseball made this game.
But I also felt that we all had the understanding that when a first game is made by a company, it's not going to be amazing.
Okay, well, that's a different point.
I don't think anybody ever expects a first game from a studio to be like an absolute solid home run. See, that actually applies here because it's a baseball game.
Look at you.
How about that?
Terminology.
Baseball terms, yeah. But it wasn't awful, though.
No, but it was more like
mediocre is probably a good way to put it. It was just all right.
It was a base hit.
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah, that's pretty much all it was. It was a base hit. It felt like it was stuck too much in, as I said, those 32-bit gameplay mechanics. Mm. And now I feel like the guys at RBI Baseball, at least what they're telling us, is that they have taken the feedback that people gave them from the first RBI Baseball of this current generation, RBI Baseball 14, and they've used that to change up some of what RBI Baseball 15 is going to be. I do not think that the gameplay will change drastically. And to be honest, I'm happy for that because it's not like I'm ever going to pick up the show and be great at it. RBI Baseball, in terms of baseball games, is about as complicated as I want to get.
Right.
So the mechanics will stay somewhat close to what they are.
That's the real difference here, is that the show is not a very easy first-time pick-up-and-play game. It takes a while to get used to it and to play it, whereas RBI and previously 2K before it were much more, you could pick it up and not super quick, but as quickly as possible, you could pick it up and play it. You want to talk about some of the new features here, Brian?
Well, I was literally, before you started talking, I was literally going to say that this game will stay somewhat close to what it currently is, or at least what you would imagine RBI Baseball to be in your head, but they're going to add authentic baseball parks for all 30 franchises. You think they took Sony's data for that? Mm. Or, I mean, if there's anybody out there that had access to the major league parks around the major leagues, it is the Advanced Media Division.
Of course, as I said,
Major League Baseball.
I don't think they really had to go to anybody. I mean, they probably have it internally.
It was more a question of time and effort. This is a budget title. I mean, they'll be charging somewhere in the range of $15 for this game. It's only going to be downloadable on consoles, phones, stuff like that, but they're only going to be charging a small amount of money for it. It's not going to be a big budget AAA title. So the question is it worth it for them to go around to all the parks and capture all their own data, or do they just have that laying around, or did Sony give it to them? Anyhow, regardless of where it comes from, they're going to try and make detailed replicas of all 30 ballparks. They're going to have the full rosters for all the teams, which I believe that they did have the full rosters last year. It's been a while since I played RBI Baseball 14, but I'm pretty sure they had the rosters last year. Anyhow, they're also going to have stat tracking. You'll have online play for the first time, so you can play online against people in friendly or ranked games. You'll be able to change the gameplay settings, easy, medium, or hard. And also, the game is now coming to PC and Mac. Last year, it was only phones and consoles. So now it's phones, consoles, and the PC or Mac platforms, which, give me on the phone. That seems like the right place for RBI Baseball to be these days.
So that's RBI Baseball 15. Do we know when it's coming out? Soon?
They only said this spring.
That's a good time for a baseball game to come out.
That is perfect time.
It's a good time for a baseball game to come out, isn't it? Spring. That's
someone
when people
would probably
want to play it.
I would say someone could go off their limb and just say perhaps early April.
Yeah.
Very early April.
Around opening day.
Say the first week of April, maybe.
I think are you on the limb right now? Are you saying it?
Sure, why not?
Boom, he's gonna do it.
You are on
it's
the
happening.
Limb.
What exactly do I have to lose? It's
nothing.
Baseball.
You have nothing to live. You're listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Oh my god, I almost said I'm Brian Calhoun. That's
What's
a terrible thing for me
today?
To say. What is going
this
on?
We're recording this on Friday the 13th. Is this what Friday the 13th is
happening.
All about?
Yeah, that is the worst thing I could have ever said about myself. That's Brian Calhoun giving me a scowly look. This is Christine Chubb to my right.
Yes.
I'm Omen Qureshi, as I have been for the last 36 years of existence. I've been that every day. And you are listening to Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Christine.
Yes.
A little while ago, I teased Brian that you were excited about some stuff.
Yes.
You want to tell me what that stuff is?
A very big announcement, kind of a very surprising announcement happened this week, is that video game company Bethesda,
who you may know, they
who
made
you
a few
may know
makers of Fallout,
Doom, Dishonored. They recently did The Evil Within, as well as my game of the year last year, Wolfenstein. They have announced that this year they will be doing an E3 press conference, which is a first ever for them. And I was completely shocked by this because Bethesda has always been a company that holds things really close to the chest. And last year, they came to E3 with The Evil Within and Battlecry, and that was it. So, obviously, what are they going to show? Everybody's first reaction and the most excitement was Fallout 4. They were finally going to admit the worst-kept gaming secret that this game is coming. But then people started thinking, well, at least I started thinking, the average press conference at E3 is an hour, and you go, like, it's not only Microsoft and Sony, you've got other gaming companies like EA, and you've got Ubisoft who do them, and these are two companies who announce a lot of games. Like, it's not just here's one or two, here's Fallout, or here's Battlecry, which you saw. So what could they possibly announce? Will it be another Doom? Will it be a next installment to The Elder Scrolls? The Elder Scrolls Online comes to console 1 week before E3, so I assume they're going to start giving a bit of a fancy for that. But what else could it be? Are they going to announce a new IP? Are we going to see another Prey? Like,
yeah, you're right, because E3 press conferences, for people who've never seen one or don't know, they're usually held in pretty big venues, theaters, some are in stadiums, like Microsoft does theirs in a stadium, as does Sony. Sony does theirs in a stadium, or an arena. It's not a stadium, it's an arena. So
on the former Olympic grounds in Las Vegas, or sorry, Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's where Sony does theirs, and Microsoft does theirs at the University of Southern California's basketball arena. So they're
the Galen Center.
Yeah, it's in a pretty big area. It's in a pretty big arena, and they're usually like big spectacles and lots of theatrics, and celebrities come out, and so they do it up big. That's not to say that that's how Bethesda has to do it or is going to do it, but that's just how it's been done over the past 4 years or 5 years that we've been to E3.
Well, I was even joking too that they could literally start the press conference, walk out, say Fallout 4 is coming, drop the mic and walk off, and it'd be like, that's it. It's done. Just have a big picture of, assuming Boston, since we've heard lots of teas that it's going to be Boston, just a picture of a destroyed Boston in the background, and it'd be like, have a good day. Also, and play our Battlecry game, which comes out soon.
And then Christina would be sitting there, yay!
Yeah, I'd be like, you win! Give this man the $10,000!
Wait, there's $10,000?
No, it's a Simpsons thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. I mean, that is what everybody got super excited about. And I'm, of course, super excited because, you know.
You are literally wearing a Bethesda
shirt. I am wearing a Bethesda shirt.
You are right
That's completely coincidental. I think everybody has a super right to be excited for it. I mean, obviously, Fallout 3 was a massive game.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Let's step back from the actual Bethesda press conference and say, okay, this seems like, without them actually saying it, that Fallout 4 is, or another Fallout game at least, is going to be coming. You're a huge fan of the franchise.
Yes.
How do you feel?
I'm excited. And I said this in my review of Wolfenstein. When you were walking through some of the destructed city in your environment, all I kept thinking was, how beautiful this would look if this was Fallout. I'm ready for another game. I always said when Fallout New Vegas came out that it was too soon. It was too back-to-back, and I thought that it really suffered for it. I didn't think New Vegas was that great of a game. I've even gone back and tried to replay it again, and it's still not as good as Fallout 3. I think enough time has passed. Bring it. Even just tell me. Just tell me it's happening. Tell me it's coming. I just need to know. I know it's happening. I just need you to say it. Tell me. Tell me Fallout 4 is coming. Tell me it is in Boston or wherever it is.
I just want to get somebody from Bethesda on the phone now just so Christine can say it on the phone. Tell me. Just tell me. Just give it to me.
For the love of God, just tell me.
Just say it. Just say it.
I just need you to say it.
Come on, just say it.
Can we just film this so that we can also get the amazing hand work that's going on right now?
That's, you know, that's the saddest part about our show not being simulcast on Sportsnet or any one of the Sportsnet networks, is that they don't get to see the amazing hand gestures that Christine does.
I get a little emphatic about things. It happens. But I'd also be really excited to see, I mean, they teased Doom last year, so I'd like to see a little bit more about Doom. Who doesn't love Doom? It was one of the first games that I really was like, wow, that's shooting. I mean, granted, you look at it now and you're like, wow. That's
also, Doom the movie, better than Citizen Kane. Not a lot of people know that.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly
number
right.
Number one on the AFI's best 100 movies of all time.
And they know good movies.
They do.
What else would you like to see? Let's ask our audience. What would you like to see at a Bethesda press conference other than Fallout? Would you be excited about another Evil Within? Would you be excited about another Quake? Would you be excited about another Prey?
Can I make a prediction for you for Bethesda for this news conference?
Do it.
New IP.
Nice. I'm going to say that too.
I think there's going to be a new IP.
Maybe it'll
be... Well, there'd have to be something. 2 or 3 minutes ago, someone said that Bethesda is not EA or Activision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not uncommon to go an entire year without Bethesda releasing some game or something like that. It is very common, in fact. What was the last Bethesda game before Wolfenstein, Christine? I'm just struggling to think. Was it New Vegas?
Wolfenstein and Evil Within came out very close to each other. But before that, it had to be something else, but I can't, you know what, I can't even think about it. Oh, it must have been Prey 2, I guess.
Prey 2 hasn't come out.
Or Prey, the first one.
The first one came out in like 2008. The original Prey is a long time. Anyhow, my point has been proven by the fact that this isn't exactly EA, so it has to be new IP, because at this point, you have Doom, you have Fallout.
Well, I mean, they put out Skyrim.
Do you really think they're not going to do
Skyrim? No, I'm just saying Skyrim was 2000.
I'm just saying Skyrim came out a couple of years ago.
Even Skyrim was 2011.
But was it 2011?
Could you imagine that?
No, it was 2011. Or Rage. I guess they had Rage as well.
Yeah, they had Rage. That was... But Rage did not do
it
well.
It didn't do fantastic at all, but...
That was the zombie one, right?
Yeah.
Rage was the open world, John Goodman as, like, your first NPC contact. And, yeah... It tried to be.
Again, I wish we were on TV so people could see Brian's face right now.
It tried to be the Borderlands franchise without the actual fun of a Borderlands franchise.
No claptrap, no fun.
No. Turns out when you go into a desert and everyone has to be really serious and all the guns are kind of serious, it's not as fun.
No, you gotta have some comedy in most games, otherwise it doesn't work so well.
So my only fear is exactly what will Bethesda have at their press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Fallout seems like the obvious one. I can't imagine Skyrim is going to be there, because they're talking about Skyrim or they're talking about Fallout. That's how they've done it ever since the beginning of these two franchises. It's been one or the other. These are the two major ones. They don't interact. So my fear is that it's just going to be a lot of sitting there kind of waiting for
until
the press conference.
Until this year's E3.
Kind of waiting for the press conference to be over, because everything else that they'll show will be super boring.
Until this year, when they put the two games together into one game.
I would be happy too if it was even just half an hour press conference and they'd be half an hour hands-on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Battlecry looked really good last year from what I saw, and it's a pretty big leap for this company, just in the fact that it's their first online multiplayer game. And
it's a massive online battle arena?
Yeah, except that there's no guns. It's all like melee combat, and then it's kind of a cool idea, and it's got a really kind of interesting look to it. And I think they definitely want to push the more publicity for that game as well. I mean, they tried to show it off, but there wasn't really a lot to say last year about it because it was so new. So, I mean, obviously, that's going to definitely be a showcase this press conference.
Coming up next, Brian's going to review one of the more anticipated games of the year, Evolve. That's next on Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. That's what you're listening to right now. My name is Momin Qureshi. Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb are around the table. We've arrived at our third and final segment for this week. At GotGame590 on Twitter is where you can follow us. Now, Christine.
Yes?
We had a tweet earlier this week.
We sure did.
From Kelly Gatlin. And she said, have you guys heard about the botched Telltale Games release of Game of Thrones Episode 2? It's a mess. iOS Xbox game is unplayable. And you played it.
I did,
on
actually.
On the Xbox.
On the Xbox One.
And you also had many troubles with it.
I did. I actually held a live stream of it on Thursday. If you tuned in, you got to witness a little bit of the glitchiness that did happen. It's not unplayable, but the first 10 minutes got very ugly very quickly.
How so?
It got to the point where there's a first scene where you go into a cantina and enemy guys come in and you have to basically fight them. And
did Han shoot first?
I was going to make a Star Wars. I was going to ask if the song was playing.
It would be a little more melodic since it's Game of Thrones. Right. It would be like, dude.
It's just the word cantina. That's the only place I've ever heard cantina.
I understand cantinas were around long before Star Wars ever came, but I cannot think of anything other than Star Wars when I hear the word cantina.
Anyway, so you fight this guy. This guy comes at you at one part in the game. And if you've played a Telltale game, you kind of know how their attack system works. It's a lot of just putting the joystick left or right and pushing a button.
They're basically quick time events.
They are quick time events. So what happened to me, very early on in the game, is this guy comes at me. You're told to go move the joystick left, and then you hit Y to counteract his attack. So I did that, but I didn't do it fast enough the first time, and I died. So it loaded me literally right in front of this fight. And it said, you know, move your joystick right. I did that, and then the game froze completely. And then I just heard, oh, and my dude is like, you are dead.
I'm sorry, what did you hear?
Oh, I could do it over because I heard it 6 times.
Brian, that's going on the GOT game soundboard, 100%.
Six times this happened to me before. I was so frustrated. I thought, that's it. Like, I won't be able to go any further in this game. Like, it would reload, and then it would just freeze, and sometimes I would see myself being stabbed, and sometimes I wouldn't even see that. It would just go to the you've died load screen. Out of complete frustration, I ended up just, once again, loaded back in, swiped right, and I just repeatedly just kept hitting Y, because obviously, since the game was still processing, it was still happening. What was going on was still happening in the game. I just couldn't see or take part in any of it. So I thought, forget it. I'm just going to keep hitting Y, and eventually, hopefully, I'm hitting it at the right time. And it did. Eventually, it jumped forward, and I saw me deflecting the guy, and I was able to kill him. But that was very frustrating, because for a second, I thought of that tweet, and I thought, that's it. This game won't be playable. I've paid for this, and I'll just have to wait for a patch, and who knows when that will be. But thankfully, I was able to get by it once more. Once more later on in the game, I got to the point where I was supposed to be carrying this bale of hay or something. No, it was a barrel.
I get those two mixed up all the time also.
Well, you know.
Depends on how drunk you are.
It's Game of Thrones. It's always something.
Especially since I'm in the city and I have bales of hay and just barrels lying around.
Well, you're in the north.
What, the cantinas that you go to don't have bales of hay in them?
No, I don't go there anymore after Han shot first.
That's true.
This is later when you're at the wall and you're with Jon Snow. It's a thing. They're rescue men and they have hay and stuff. Anyway, you're supposed to take this barrel across the screen, and I got stuck behind somebody, and I couldn't move, and I probably yelled an obscenity onto the live stream that I was doing, because I was like, not again! Like, it was going so well. But I was able to get out of that. The game just kind of rebooted again.
And when it comes to Telltale games, I tend to wait, say, a month or so before I play them, because let's not forget, Telltale has had a history of these. Telltale's not like the world's biggest studio. They're one of the last independent studios out there that really get to make their own choices and the games that they want to make.
Yeah.
And companies love working with them because they are a small little organization that can make their own choices.
And they do things at their own pace, too.
Yes, they do things at their own pace, but they have limited resources, so their games are often broken at launch. I think it was just one of the episodes of season one of The Walking Dead completely wiped everybody's PlayStation 3 data for The Walking Dead when they tried to play.
That's not that big of a problem. So what if it wiped your PS3?
I think it was episode 4 of season 1.
Man.
You know, they make these really good worlds, and sometimes they have technical issues, so you might just want to wait, say, a month or something before you play their next game.
Yeah, I was thinking, too, like, sometimes it's months between episodes when it comes to these things, and this was just, it was literally 1 month after the first release, so I thought, you know, if this is the way it's going to be, maybe we can relax a little bit. We can give them a little bit more time between episodes.
You're listening to GOT Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Brian Calhoun, Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb are on the table. Brian, Christine's not the only one who's been gaming this week. You've been playing one of the games that I was super excited for when we came back from E3 last year.
Darwinianism the game.
Yes, I guess so. It's called Evolve. It's a bit of a different format of a game compared to things that we've seen. I mean, it has been done before, but it's kind of a neat twist on it, I guess.
Elements of this game have been done before.
So the game's Evolve.
Yes.
It's made by 2K.
It's published by 2K, made by Turtle Rock, who made the original Left 4 Dead game.
Okay. And the way the game works is it's a 4-on-1 scenario that you can play in.
Yeah.
So one character is the Kraken, or a beast of some sort.
Yes.
A monster of some sort. And you play, you can play as the beast against four people who are trying to take you down. And then each of the four people that you're playing as have a different skill. So I believe one is a trapper, and one is like a medic, and one is, I don't know, the other two are
support class and assault class.
There you go. And so it's a 4-on-1 scenario where you're trying to take down the beast. Tell us about the game.
Well, that's basically the setup of the game. So I'll get right into my review. Evolve starts off pretty much every mission with your hunter team is in a spaceship flying down. Someone has spotted the monster. So if you're playing as the monster, the round begins. You're just like, you're told run. Because the second you start running, that spaceship is coming to get you. And every mission is some variation of the monster has to go out into the world, kill all this wildlife, consume it so that it can take in whatever it is consuming in order to upgrade and evolve. And the hunters are constantly chasing you around. And man, when you're playing as the monsters, there's no one that you hate more than those four hunters who will not get off your back for 1 second just while you try and devour this rock-like beast, which will give you enough upgrade points to upgrade to the next level. Man, those hunters just will not get off your back.
Empathy for the bad guy.
So it's basically a chase. You, as the four hunters, are chasing around the monster around the map, trying to kill the monster when it's at a low level, because it has three levels of upgrading. It can be like a very easy hunt if you get them while it's in the first stage, second stage a little harder, third stage, well, if you're going up against a monster when he's at his third stage, you better have your stuff together, because it is not going to be an easy fight.
Yeah.
And that is really the game. There are different variations on how you play this game. There are sometimes missions where you have to defend a point as the hunter, and the monster has to attack it. There are times where you have to rescue random NPCs in the world, and the monster has to take out these NPCs while you try and defend them and get them to extraction points. It's all variations of this one monster versus four hunter mechanic. And it's actually broken down into individual characters. It's actually like thought out really well, because a lot of the classes complement each other. You know, you have a medic that can heal or also shoot tranquilizer darts at the beast and slow it down. And that gives your trapper a chance to catch up and throw the arena bubble, which lets your assault guy get in really close and stay near the monster and sort of use all his weapons, while your support guy uses his portable shield generator to create a shield around the assault dude and protect him for as long as possible while the assault guy is just wailing away. And I hope this all made sense, but it explains sort of how they use their powers and their techniques and their technology together in very smart ways. So team mechanics, team compatibility is very important in this game in order to make a team that can take down the monster.
I've heard that as well. A few people have commented, like, if the monster is at a higher level, you really have to work together, because if one of your guys die, it's almost impossible to win the game as the good guys.
Yeah, no, exactly. If you get stuck with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing or is going to run off by himself, if you roll up on the monster, three of your guys really working together and one guy across the map, what if that guy's the trapper? You can't trap the monster in this portable arena bubble that you guys can produce if the trapper is sort of doing that person's job properly. So yeah, being a team player is really important in this game. And if you don't have a really good team, well, then a lot of times it comes down to you just running around the map. And that was my biggest problem with this game. This game could be really fun if you're in the right situation. Those modes I talked about earlier, where you are defending as the hunter, where you have a spot that you have to defend and a monster has to come to you, that's really exciting, because it always means there's action happening all the time. But when stuff does not come together right, when you're stuck in a situation where you have a new guy who doesn't know what he's doing, the game modes normally just turn into you just running around the map for the entire time, just chasing a beast you can't catch. And it just becomes really boring at that point, because well, imagine sitting there for 10 minutes constantly running around this map. And maybe sometimes in the distance you see the guy, but you're never going to get close to him.
Yeah.
That's when this game really falls apart.
But that's less the game and more your team, though. You got to have the right team working with you. Otherwise, it's useless.
I understand that is not the fault of the developers in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to make a game where having the right team is the biggest, most important part of the gameplay, and then if you don't have four other people who bought the game and they're willing to devote enough time each week for you to play all together, then you're stuck with random people.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, isn't that the fault of the developers, just as a gameplay design choice?
I guess so.
So well,
talk to us a bit about how you make your team. Like, is it easy to jump into a new game? Is it one of those things where it's better to just organize with your friends ahead of time? Or what is the best way to play it?
That's a hard one to answer because I don't know if there's one best way to play. In fact, I don't know how useful this review is going to be because I figure in 2 weeks from now, people are going to either have dropped out of Evolve completely mm-hmm. or they're going to have played this game so much that they will know all the maps and all the characters and they will know everything and the tactics will change completely and it'll be a completely different game than it is today
mm-hmm.
because of how much knowledge you have gained about the game. In fact, one of my problems with the game is that there's a whole bunch of cool stuff in this game. There's 3 characters for every position, as I said, support, assault, medic, trapper. So there's 3 trappers, there's 3 medics, there's 3 assaults, so on and so forth. And you unlock those guys by being different challenges. And then once you get all the guys together, it feels like a really good game, except for a lot of those mechanics, a lot of the people that you can play as, they are locked behind progression bars. So, yeah, that's just another... It's a weird game. I feel like Evolve is an 8 out of 10. It's a really good game in terms of mechanics mm-hmm. and visuals and gameplay.
Is it fun? It looks fun.
It's fun when you have like the right situation together right. where everyone's working together.
Yeah.
But so much is dependent on your team and what gear they have. Not just who comes, but how good they are at the game and what gear they have. Yeah. Because there are some higher level guys that have amazing tools
right,
and techniques that just change the game completely. So I'm going to give the game an 8 out of 10. It's an iffy choice. It's one of those ones where I'm having a hard time saying one way or the other. Because the game is good, but you got to make sure you can find a team that can play together or else you're just going to be running around the forest. And that's no fun.
Yeah.
8 out of 10 for Evolve.
There you go. That's Brian Calhoun's review of Evolve. And that's all the time we have for this week. So for Brian, Christine Chubb, and I'm Omid Qureshi, this has been Got Game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.